This is Brock.
Hi, and this is Aaron.
And we're at the very beginning of Humanity on Wheels 2, the TriMet storytelling event from TriMet Diaries and Kick-Ass Oregon History.
At the Jack London Bar.
Nestled below the Rialto Pool Hall. Yes, in downtown
Portland. Downtown Portland.
And we're looking forward to hearing fantastic stories of riding the bus, riding the Max, and whatever else people happen to say tonight.
Yeah.
And much drunken rambling.
I hope so.
Yeah. It'll only get better as the night goes on. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome to the Jack London Bar for Humanity on Wheels 2. That's right, you got so drunk last time, we decided to do it once again. So we're going to play a couple songs about mass transit and to kind of get you in the mood. And also to get you in the mood, Naked Winery has free samples of their wines over there. Why are you not partaking in those delicious drinks? Now, I need to warn you, tonight's presentations shall contain some graphic language. So I just got to lay that out there because the management, the MGMT period, told me to do so. So tonight there's a drink special. It's the Mad Max. It's only for $7. It's a PBR tall boy because they ain't no short boys for PBRs. It's a tall boy and a shot of Old Crow for only $7. The Mad Max, Portland's death trolley. So yeah, I definitely want to thank the Jack London Bar for having us down here tonight. I want to thank Melissa, the intern, too, for all the work that she does, including the awesome fucking tram. The tram, man. And I have to thank Brock from Sprocket Podcast. He is recording this show so you can hear the entirety on the interwebs because they aren't already filled with enough shit. We have to put some more out there. Oh, and Brock bought Dr. Jeff a beer, too, which is awesome. Yeah, definitely. All right, that's the housekeeping shit. My name is Doug Kent Crispin, and I'm the ribald resident historian from Kick-Ass Oregon History. Thank you. My one fan out there, thank you. I appreciate it. And fuck you all. Thank you. You're interrupting my flow. See, I ride the bus every day. Every fucking day I ride the bus, and I've pretty much done so in this town since 1983. And I wrote this little, yeah, I know, I have a youthful appearance as well, but I wrote this little piece that I'm calling Lost and Found. So tonight you're going to hear a lot of fucking happy, huggy stories about riding the bus, and somebody has to be a contrarian, so that's fucking me. I mean, I'm the guy that told you about all the people that got killed by Max, right? So I'm stepping up and I'm doing that kind of thing tonight. I'm going to give you the other side so that the rest of everybody can get up here and we can have a little fucking love fest about how awesome TriMet is, okay? So I am a bus person. Now, there are bus people and there are train people, okay? Are there tram people? And I don't mean doctors because that's kind of bullshit. Are there I don't know if there's fucking tram people. But, you know, there are people who just ride the Max. They drove cars before there was a Max. And I'm not one of those people. I mean, I ride the Max every once in a while. It just kind of happens. But I feel like I'm in a tourist in a different fucking city when I get that thing. Like I'm going to visit a museum or something. I just don't dig it. I don't care for the Max at all. In fact, I actually miss the 5 interstate, and I would gladly, fucking gladly, trade the yellow line to get that fucking tweaker bendable bus back. I fucking miss it. I am a bus person. And I always sit at the back of the bus, the very last fucking row. It feels like I have more time to see the world as it approaches and as it goes by the windows. I have a little bit longer to take in all of Portland as it slowly moves by the traveling bus windows. It's like a reality show every fucking day for 2 45-minute segments. If the phrase didn't want to make me gag, I might say it's the real Portlandia, but I just can't fucking do that. And I see everything in our city. I see the good, I see the bad, and I see the shitty. And as we'll find out tonight, that isn't always a good thing. But I think the main reason that I ride at the back of the bus is maybe, just maybe, I don't trust any of you fuckers out there. Not a one of you. And I like to keep my eyes on every fucking one of you as we head down that road. And I see a lot of things as I sit in the back row. The entire bus is there for me to survey. This slice of humanity on wheels. Nice, huh? This slice of humanity on wheels is there for me to witness. And I see it all. I take it all in. Every fucking detail. I'm a mute spectator to this drama as it proceeds to the formerly Fairless Square. Sometimes I interject into the scene that is laid out for me to enjoy. A man who was sitting next to me on the back bench, he left his debit card on the seat. I piped up, "Hey, you left your debit card." He got it from me, and he thanked me with the slightest of a fucking nod. But that's cool. Little beer break. Lost and found. You know, I've never, ever parted with any of my physical belongings on the bus. In the 29 years that I've ridden the bus, I have never left a material object behind, which makes me wonder about you fucking people. The people out there that I see on the public conveyance machine every fucking day. Now, I tried to arrange for a tour of TriMet's Lost and Found for this chat, but they wouldn't return my calls. They're like, "Oh, you're that fucking Mad Max guy, right? That shit was real funny." Yeah, they wouldn't call me back. Maybe they lost my messages. I don't know. I wanted to see the facility and take pictures of it and show you them and talk to you about those pictures. Tell you how the lost and found process works. Because I've never fucking been there. I don't know. I've never lost anything on the bus. Now, TriMet's website says, "Complete the form below to report a lost item to Lost and Found. After 14 days, unclaimed items are donated to charity. Please note, we do not return phone calls unless we have located your item." I guess that's helpful. I don't know. But I'm picturing a labyrinth beneath Pioneer Square with boxes of wallets and phones and iPods and tattered paperbacks of existential authors. There's even a few umbrellas in my vision, oddly enough. All of these things that people left on the bus, even though the helpful fucking signs told them not to do so. Even though some of you people don't have OCD like me, and you haven't fucking learned to check your pockets when you arise from the back of your seat thrice. You still leave your belongings. You get up. You get off the bus, and you leave your shit behind, and all that clutter ends up in a bin in a room of forgotten encumbrances. But let me say, I have a couple of them, lady. I have lost things on TriMet, but not cards or jackets or earbuds or non-Sony Walkmans. Dave remembers those. Less tangible things, things that you can't check your pockets thrice to see if you're endowed with. I lost the illusion of lust on TriMet. Near the steel bridge by the abutments by NATO, a dirty man sat in the brown grass with his pants around his ankles and a bottle in a bag in one hand. His other hand was on another man's head, who was completely fucking naked with grime and filth covering his shameless form. The naked man was on his knees in front of the other. His head was bobbing up and down in the other man's lap, save for when he stopped to take a deep drink of booze from the offered brown paper bag. The smile on the receiver's face was surely large, but it was hidden in the matted, dready beard. I do not make this shit up. I'm a fucking historian. The whole encounter had a feeling of a transactional nature, but for the life of me, I could not fucking imagine what commodity was being exchanged. What was this man actually getting for this epic blowjob? Was it just another deep drink of cheap liquor? Bum love has replaced lust in my visual inventory while riding on the number one. I lost the myth of romance on TriMet. August, the mind-boggling, stifling heat that can only come when air conditioning works best with the windows closed, and they fucking weren't. A man and a woman, the rush hour packed bus. Standing near the back door, they coupled. The smell of cheap liquor and sweat and piss rose off of them in the domineering heat of the bus. You know the smell. Well, you fucking people who ride the Max, you don't know that smell. But the rest of us do. The smell creates such a unique scent that is a truly individual in olfactory provenance. Somehow the smell of the bus gets mixed in there as well. And it's a really fucking distinct bouquet. Their hairs were both stringy and matted. It looked and smelled like they had not bathed in an August week. His greasy tongue was sticking out of his mouth, and he would slip it in the gap between her front teeth. She must have been missing 8 or 10 of them. He swayed from the drunkenness, and she had to catch him several times as the bus made turns. She was a large woman, but her stained and filthy Daisy Dukes were quite small. They allowed his grimy fingers an aperture as he probed her vagina. Yes, yes, while sticking his tongue into the where her teeth should have been place. With one hand, she held the handrail above, and with the other, she tried to remove his fingers from her fleshy folds. Not in a don't you do that way, but more in a let's wait until we get off the bus way. But he was persistent and not steady on his feet. So she just tried to curtail it as much as possible. And she looked about apologetic to the other riders. They finally left the packed bus on Williams. He disembarked with some assistance and promptly puked on the street. Romance is not always roses, I learned on the 55. I lost the last vestiges of blissful ignorance I possessed in 1998 on a TriMet bus. I was crossing the steel bridge and saw several ambulances and police cars in the right lane attending some sort of accident. I found out later that two 20-something junkies, Michael Douglas and Maura McGowan, had hung themselves off the side of the bridge, a suicide pact, as they were recently homeless and unable to curb their $200-a-day heroin addiction. Douglas wrote in a 13-page journal found in the book bag slung over his shoulder. He wrote, I think I've decided an old-fashioned public hanging. This steel bridge shall be my gallows. Maura and I go together on the steel bridge. There is no more ignorance. All hope that was lost on that July 1st on the number 40. Sorry to be a bummer, man. Hey. So fuck you. Everyday, absent-minded commuter. Fuck you. Digging through the bins under Pioneer Square, looking for your iPod that you lost or your umbrella that has the logo of Spirit Mountain Casino emblazoned on it. Fuck you, Tweaker, as you tell me about your lost check that you left on the Max, and could I hit you up with a fin to help you through the day? And fuck you, you literate hipster, as you bitch about how your copy of The Stranger that you left on the number 4 wasn't in the lost and found cheesy fucking book bin at TriMet. Yeah, I'm sure somebody fucking stole it. Fuck you all. Where's my bin at Pioneer Square? Where's the bin full of innocence? Where's the pile of romance kept? Do you have some unclaimed ignorance? Because I could really fucking use mine back, man. You can replace your iPod or your umbrella or get an alternate from pals.com for your deeply fucking cherished literature. These new to you physical items to carry in your hands until you lose them again right on the same goddamn bus as last time. This option, however, is fucking unavailable to me. I've traded my lost things out for images of bum blowing and drunken puking fondling and two young Portlanders dangling from the black like tar rails of the steel bridge. Fuck you, TriMet, and fuck you for the things that I've lost while sitting in the back row of your buses. I'll never have them back. If only every fucking day I had driven a car. Thank you. Well, thank you. And now I would like to turn this over to my dear friend, Will Regan.
So I got to follow that. You all heard about the hanging part, right? Yeah, that's good times. Thanks for coming out tonight. I appreciate it. Thanks to Dave and Heather. TriMet Diaries, an awesome site. And you really, TriMetDiaries.com, great place to tell your stories. It's awesome. Thanks very much to the bartenders who make delicious drinks this evening. Please tip them well. It's my old band days. I got to take care of the crowd. So I am without a drink. What an uncomfortable way to be standing up here.
What do you want,
Bill? I took tequila and orange juice. It's a wonderful way. Well, thank you.
You
oh, no, that is really not anything like tequila and orange juice. Oh, thank you so much. Fantastic. I appreciate that. Look at this. Now, this is why I do these shows. Cheers. Thank you. Naked Winery. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Try their samples. And it's quite delicious, too. Quite delicious. So, hey, I'm here to talk to you about cussing. Now, I know that Doug didn't do much of it, but I got no problem with cussing. Cussing's great with me. As my boss who's here knows, cussing at inappropriate times is fine with me. But I have one particular pet peeve, and that is you don't cuss around children. Simple. You know, I'm old school in that one regard. And just about a week ago, this is actually not my story, but this is a preface to the story. So I ride the bus with my daughter every morning. We go to school. And we don't see any of the things that Doug sees, which is just totally exciting to me now. I didn't realize how awesome my boring ass number 35 was. I call it the library bus because people just don't even... Yeah, booyah! Actually, the 35 would be more like, booyah. Thanks for coming. I'll talk to you after the ride. It's a really, really quiet ride. But so we hop off the 35 and we get off in Old Town. And I don't know if you've ever been to Old Town, but there are several colorful characters who live in that area. And so I get off the bus with my daughter. This is, again, just about a week ago. And two guys are walking up behind us. And one of them is just, fucking A, if I got the fucking job, there wouldn't have been a fucking problem. I don't know what the fucking, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm hearing this, and I'm with my daughter, and it's like, you know, this is in public. What can you do? But I hear his friend say, dude, there's a fucking children right there, you know? And it was like, it was awesome because, you know, the first guy who had been cussing, he was kind of like, oh, you know, yeah, I never think about that, but you're right. You know, you took the moral high ground, and now I'm fucked over here. And so when this happened, I made it a point to turn to the guy who had said, dude, there's children here, and I gave him the man nod, you know, which clearly indicated I appreciate you having the old school ways of not swearing around children. And he gave me the little man nod back that said, hey, thanks for acknowledging that. That's because it's, you know, I appreciate that too. When you do something good, it's nice when someone says, hey, thanks for doing the good thing. So, to my story, more about 5 or 6 years ago, my daughter's about 4. A friend comes to town. We're planning a little adventure downtown. So we took the train down to Rose Quarter, and then we hopped onto a bus. And I'm a bus person, to go with what Doug said earlier. The Max, I love the Max. I will take the Max anytime. I don't have the discomfort upon it that he experiences. But I'm a 35 guy. You know, that's just, I've been riding the 35 as long as I can remember, since before my girls were born. And so we get downtown, I mean, we get to the Rose Quarter and we hop onto the bus, and it's a crowded bus. And so I end up taking the seat, like the last seat facing forward on the right. I assume you all know the buses. So when I describe the actual layout, you'll say, oh, yeah, I know that seat. That's the seat. You know, if somebody was waiting to go out the back door, they would be right behind you. And so I'm sitting there. My friend Scott sits right over here, like one seat ahead of me on the other side. And it's crowded. So my daughter's sitting in my lap, and there's a lot of people coming in and coming in. And the last two guys who come on are like these 20-something guys who were wearing dirt for shirts. Blue jeans and dirt. Fortunately, nobody was doing what was previously described by the dirty men. But so these guys get on, and it's crowded, so one of them stands in the front, and one of them comes to the back, and he's standing right behind me. So I can't really see him, but I can hear him right here. And he wants to continue the conversation that he'd been having with his friend, and I will now give you a sample of that conversation. Hey, we should fucking go to fucking Teddy's, man. That fucker's always home. We'll fucking go there. Again, I don't mind swearing, but I've got a little girl, a four-year-old, sitting in my lap. And there comes that moment, so he continues to have this conversation 20 feet down the bus. So it's two guys. I should point out that the rest of the bus is not participating in this conversation anyway. Had there been like 19 of these people going like, fuck yeah, man, Teddy's, that's the fucking place to go. It would have been like, well, clearly I'm on the swearing bus and I'm just going to endure it. But the bus is entirely silent except for these two loud guys who are yelling across the way and just punctuating it with cusses. And so there comes that moment when you realize it's like, okay, in the movie, this would be where you would stand up and say, would you please not cuss in front of the child? And in the movie, that would go as really good. Like, oh, I apologize, you know? Forgive me. I will be much quieter now. Oh, thank you so much. You are a godsend. I'll put it right here on this laptop.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It comes with a little coaster on there.
Awesome. So I have that moment. It's like, because I think to myself, this is an opportunity for me to show my child that, you know, you when you see something bad happening in the world, then you can just speak up and just say, hey, listen, can we just stop with the bad thing, at least until I'm out of sight, and then go about your business and enjoy that brown bag of liquor, sir. So I decide that that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stand up for what is right. And I just know in my heart, because I believe in people. I believe that people are genuinely good and are generally good, and that if you ask them to not misbehave, they will generally say, okay, I'm not going to misbehave until you're out of sight, and then I'll get back to it. So I said, looking over my shoulder, and I was like, pardon me, would you mind watching the language? And he turned out to be a really reasonable individual, and he said, welcome to fucking public, man! And I realized that the lesson that I'm going to teach my daughter is not to stand up for what's right. The lesson I'm going to teach is you can get yourself beat up on the Mac, on the bus, by mouthing off to a guy who's wearing dirt for a shirt. So, and I'm just filled with regret. It's just like, oh my God, I would have been on this bus for like 10 minutes, and now it's like stretched to its ridiculous physics that even Einstein would be like, holy shit, what happened on that bus? I was so uncomfortable. And reason I'm uncomfortable is because this guy's standing up behind me. And again, I can't really see him. And I can hear him, though, and he's like, welcome to fucking public, man. This is my fucking First Amendment right. I can fucking say anything I want. You don't fucking like it, you can fucking go home. Just fucking stay home. And I'm just thinking to myself, First Amendment? Really? Yes, that's right before the Supreme Court. Yes, the gentleman was saying, let's go visit fucking Tony. You know? Oh, damn, I lost that case. So I'm sitting there, but of course, I can't see the guy. So I'm looking around, and the guy who I happen to see is this, oh, it's hard to describe it, but he's got long blonde hair. He's probably early 20s. He borrowed his mom's minivan to drive down to occupy Portland. This is the only way I can describe him. And when you see it, like, I look around on this bus, and this same thing happens like when I watch a movie. Like, if they scan the crowd in the movie, there's that one person where it's like, oh, man, don't make that guy the bastard, because I'm going to be right on board with that. In fact, I think of Kelly Oxford. I don't know if you follow her on Twitter. Very funny woman. But she had a great line. She said, I'm at the airport, already picked out my enemy. And I love that line. It's just because, you know, it's just human nature. Well, I had picked out my enemy on this bus, and it was this kid who was all about, he's the guy who's in the front of the class nodding along to the teacher. You know, like, oh, yeah, okay, we can keep going, because you're right about that. And he's looking back with this expression of like, yeah, man, it's the fucking First Amendment. And I'm just, it was really like, wow, all the hatred I have for this guy, I get to focus on this one guy who I can actually see. And I wanted to, like, just say, like, dude, hang on just one second. Listen, you can't be, you know, all about being against the man and still use a whole lot of conditioner in your hair. All right? This is a fucking bias on my part. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just like, nah, no, dude, you're incongruous with the circumstances. And I'm just hating this little fucking weasel guy. And this guy's still up there. Hey, I got the rights. And my daughter's looking around like, what the fuck is going on this bus? Because, of course, she's used to the 35, where everybody's just kind of chill, you know? We don't talk about that kind of thing. So I'm sitting there totally uncomfortable, and I'm fairly certain that these two guys are going to get off at my stop. And it was just like, oh, fuck, I've got my friend with me. I've got my daughter in my arm. This is not going to be a good fight, you know? I'm going to give you a hint. I was going to lose that one. Even with my friend, who was kind of that whole same thing of like, what the fuck? This whole scene is getting weird. And so I turned to the guy, and I said, look, man, I'm not trying to fucking squash your First Amendment rights. I was just asking a favor. And I turn around, and there's a tiny, minuscule pause, and he's like, he said, let's get off at Killingsworth. Now, Killingsworth is still quite a ways away from where we're going. And I don't hear it. He's yelling, and he's clearly yelling to say, you can't tell me to be quiet, man. I can fucking do what I want. But as he's yelling more, I'm realizing he's not swearing. There's no swears involved at all. And I'm, like, conscious of it all the while planning, you know, writing my will in my head. And because it was just like, yeah, it was an uncomfortable situation. And it was an uncomfortable situation for everyone all around me. And I really wish it had been the swearing bus. But I'm listening to the guy, and he is not swearing at all. But he's still very, very loud, making sure that he shows I can do whatever I want. But he doesn't swear once. And we go to the next stop, and people get off the next one. And pretty soon he can move up to the front with his friend. And I'm talking to my daughter, trying to just kind of chill her on the whole, wow, that was a fucked up ride, wasn't it? And not the exact words I used, lest I seem hypocritical. I said, this is effed, huh? And so while I'm focusing on her, these guys got off. I didn't even see them get off. And the thing that seemed weird, like, I was very excited. I was really excited I wasn't going to get beaten up. This is something that I don't often have that exact sensation, because I very rarely get myself into circumstances where I might get beaten up. But this one particular situation where it was like, holy shit, I just dodged a bullet. And I was feeling very excited about that. But I felt like a genuine sadness as well, because he had honored my request. I had asked him a favor, and despite him being loud, he still had he'd done it. He'd stopped swearing, and I kind of felt it was like I needed to give him the man nod, you know. I needed to be like, dude, thank you, and I couldn't, and it was weird because as I get off the bus in this whole slew of emotions, the strongest emotion I had was, I wish I could have said thank you to him, because he did stop. So, if during my open mic, somebody comes up here and tells a story about this asshole dad who fucking asked a favor, got the favor, and didn't say a goddamn thing, that's an absolutely true story. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming out.
Ladies and gentlemen, Will Regan. And next we have our friend, Dr. Jeff. Are you ready, sir? Excellent. Oh, wait, oh, one quick point. Naked Winery is right over there, and they have free fucking wine, man. Go get some samples. It's awesome. It's the best stuff to come out of Hood River since, I had a really good joint from Hood River once, but maybe since then. They might even be better. But anyways, here you go.
I'm ready. So it turns out, public service announcement, there's no marijuana at the Naked Winery booth over there. It turns out that the blonde guy on Mr. Reagan's bus was actually the young Doug Kent Crispin, who lost his youth on the bus as well. Boy, I feel weird without a shot of vodka in my hand up here. It's worth a try. So, this is my beer. She's offering my own beer. Thank you. No, that's better. That's better. So they asked me to come talk at this thing again. And when I did this last time, I commuted 4 hours a day on TriMet. No, let's hear it. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. 4 hours a day, which is 20 hours a week, which is an unpaid half-time job. Some of you do unpaid half-time jobs helping children or, like, adopting, you know, homeless dogs. I had a half-time job, unpaid, sitting with people who smelled bad on the bus and on the MAX to Forest Grove every day from the Gateway Transit Center. And the weird thing is, I changed jobs about a month and a half ago, and I felt really guilty. I felt really guilty that I was no longer that guy who was the sort of heroic commuter on the bus for 4 hours a day. It got really strange. I what do you do when you're on the bus and the train for 4 hours a day? I tweeted, what, you guys are, what, 30, 40, 50 times a day. It was one of those guys that you friended and then unfriended, like, you know, 2 days later. Holy shit! What? I don't care what shoes the guy is wearing on the train. That's stupid.
He keeps calling me fuckface.
I called him a fuckface. Yes. Yeah, I should have walked out and said, hello, little fuckfaces, because that's what I called all my Twitter friends when I was actually tweeting. But after a while, you become kind of an internet celebrity. And let me tell you, internet celebrity is weird. It's weird. I got recognized on the MAX. It was very strange. Somebody, I was kind of just like had my head in my phone and I was tweeting something and I looked over and this girl was standing across the way and she holds up her phone and it's a picture of me. It was the strangest thing. I mean, does that happen to Brad Pitt, right? Well, that's kind of a weird compare. I'm comparing myself to Brad Pitt. Channing Tatum, that's the people's sexiest man, right? That's who I should compare myself to. But I mean, I looked over and there I was staring at myself from this girl's phone. I thought, it's time to quit my halftime job. I have to leave now. So now my ride is 20 minutes each way on the max. I'm one of those max people now. Although when I have to go somewhere, the other day I took the bus to the pharmacy, so you can just fuck right off. And, you know, one of the things I think in my entire lifetime, I've had exactly as much anger as Doug expressed in his little 10-minute thing there. I wish I could muster that kind of anger. I knew this was going to happen. He comes out. Mr. Reagan comes out, and he's like, and I'm like, oh, fuck. What am I going to do? I thought when I was at home, I'm like, I could tell them I have a water emergency in my basement and I don't have to go to this thing. So anyway, I quit my halftime job because internet celebrity was really weird. I tweet like 2 times a week now, much to the relief of all the people who defriended me and then friended me again, I think. But I missed it, and I miss it still. And the first couple of days when I get on at Gateway Transit Center and I get off 22 minutes later, and the first couple of days I went too far on the train. And the first couple of days I waited for the blue line to come because the blue line's the one that goes out to Hillsborough, and that's the one I always had to wait for. And now I can take the red line or the green line or the blue line downtown, and it was a very strange experience for me. But something happened that really warmed my heart the other day because I was kind of missing all the people and missing the opportunity to dream up great marketing schemes like a T-shirt that says, thank you for not smelling too weird to wear on the bus. But I got on the train and a little old lady was a little old lady. Look, I'm in my mid-50s. I'm not going to say little. That was the last time I ever going to say little old lady in my whole life. You remember Mrs. Howell from Gilligan's Island? Mrs. Howell got on the bus, or on the train across from me. And you know how sometimes people have a conversation and you think they must have a Bluetooth headset in that you just, like, they have their head turned? And she started saying, and it's just the most horrible thing, they touch each other's buttholes. And I went, what? And I'm looking for the headset, and she turns her head, and there's no headset. And I'm like, yeah, this is more like it. This is more like the experiences I'm used to on my long commute on the train and on the 57. And she went on and on about how they touched each other's buttholes and how it was a terrible thing. And then she looked over and gave me the most disturbing grin I've ever seen in my entire life. And I felt at home again. I felt so good. So, you know, it turns out that it's all the same. I mean, whether you ride 20 minutes or whether you ride 2 hours or whether you don't ride at all, that you just have to be there and be into it and knock things off the wall with your sheer presence of your abilities. But now I'm not so guilty anymore, and I get on the train at the same time I used to get on the train at 10 minutes till 7, and I take the same blue line. And I get home 3 hours earlier than I used to. And then I sit there because I can't figure out what the fuck to do with 3 hours extra in my day when I would be tweeting before. But it doesn't feel the same at my computer at home, so I don't do that anymore. And I'm not guilty anymore. And I think that the best thing that came out of that was the little old lady. I said it again. And just the fact that I'm finally home in the afternoons. And I'm going to read something now in large print because I'm an old guy. A gonzo shirt and reading glasses. I don't know if that really matches up that well. Oh, yeah, you're very attractive people. That's nice. So this is in honor of Doug, who was worried that people were going to do some really sort of soft and lovely things, and so I'm going to do a soft and lovely thing here and read a few paragraphs out of something that I wrote for TriMet Diaries a little while ago. And it turns out that one of the things that's the same thing for me is my walk to the transit center every day. Between me and the Gateway Transit Center each morning are obstacles large and small. The last few deep, warm, hypnagogic breaths of slumber, The sum of human motivation and desire coupled with the American work ethic, the reluctance to leave her side, the steadfast tree in my front yard, obstacles, yes, to be overcome on the first leg of the long journey to work each day via foot and train and bus. The tree is ripe with the promising buds of spring, and its top branches are losing their grip on a fat, full yellow moon slung low in the early morning sky. The moon must be a pretty desirable prize, as the tree seems to really be trying, clawing at the last buttery edge, fighting a losing battle, but resolute in its desire to not let go. I descend the two slick steps from the front stoop, and I stride across the unmown grass of my front lawn, on a path to intersect the moon, should it fall low enough to touch the horizon. Like the tree, I'm destined to fail. Like the tree, I'm resolute, and I shall make the attempt no matter how predestined the outcome. This is what I do. Here's where you live. You live in that moment between inhale and exhale, in that heartbeat, in that acknowledgement of breath and bone. You live in the tree that grasps at the full moon. You live in a river of concrete. You live wherever your gaze takes you, to the last sideways crescent sliver of moon as it dips below the horizon line, to the rain-slick train platform that serves to take me farther from you as you sleep, to the indigo sky that warms as the sun slowly climbs up behind you. You live in every step I take. You live forever in every fold of my clothing, under every fingernail, in each laugh line that I've earned. I take you with me on my morning walk to the train station, and I bring you back. And then I find you alive and real in my home, and I know what real happiness is. And in the morning, as a squirrel steps out to find me and guide me to my street, you live in me again. Thanks.
Dr. Jeff, ladies and gentlemen.
And we have another very special guest this evening. We have Dan Christensen joining us. Now, can we talk about the fact of your current employer? No, we will not specify that he is currently a TriMet driver, nor will we specify that he has to be one of my favorite tweeters on the Twitterverse. So, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Christensen.
So, I brought my drink here, but not used to performing without Selma Hayek next. No? Dang! Can no... With enough wine... Oh, never mind. With enough wine in the internet, even she will appear. So, I'm going to tell you about the other side, about driving the bus and what it's like to drive a bus. Because you'll hear from these pansies, these wimps, these meows, about, oh, how hard it is to commute 4 hours a day. Oh! I'm an extra board driver. I drive 10 to 16 hours a day. Oh, except if I doze off, people die. Can't doze off while driving. 4 hours. Whoa. My God. And of course, oh, he saw some naked man giving a blowjob. Oh, I call that Wednesday. Jesus, these wimps, I can't believe it. All right, that would shock a normal person, but not me. Now, I've got a defense against this stuff. I see this stuff, you know, I see the guys doing the sex thing, and I think, hey, everyone needs a hobby. That's what I do. That's what I think. And then, see, I see the flip side. I see the other side. I see the heavy woman with no teeth in the front of the bus telling me, so my boyfriend and I were getting hot by the back door, but some geek was looking at us. This freaky, weird person was staring at us like he never saw a woman get fingered on a TriMet bus. He had a notepad. He was just sketching descriptions down. Holy crap. You know, that's, I have some notes here I took because I'm an idiot. And that's my defense. I have to say that my defense, when all this is going wrong, when people are doing weird stuff in the bus, you gotta get some defense there as a bus driver. See, my trainer, Pete, he was a great guy. And he always said, gotta have that firm control voice. I'm like, is this Dune? What? No, you gotta have that, hey, you, what are you doing? Are you supposed to have that diaper on your head? Hold your kids. Don't let them hang from the bars. You have to have that control. And I thought, oh, control. That's the secret to being a bus driver. I'll be the guy in control. I'll be driving and I'll be in control. And then stuff happens. Like in 2008, we had the big snowstorm blows in. And I'm at the top hill of 82nd looking down towards Sandy, and there's 12 buses, like a jigsaw puzzle, strewn across the street. And I look down and I go, oh, crap. I got to go down there. What am I going to do? A normal person, that would freak out. But when I'm driving the bus, I'm not Dan Christensen. Happy guy. I'm Dan Christensen, Og, the caveman bus driver. Because when my hand touches the wheel, the IQ drops in half. I don't know. I'll just drive bus. They pay Og shiny. I'll drive for shiny. Somebody gets on the bus and asks these convoluted directions about traveling somewhere in Beaverton, clean across town on Thanksgiving. Og don't know. Og too stupid to know. See, that's my defense. Because somewhere out there is the dumbest bus driver at TriMet. It's got to be me. See, it helps. And I'm on the top of that hill looking down, and the ice is there, and I'm just like, yeah, okay, here we go. And this woman comes up and goes, sir, I'm going to pick up a friend at airport at 4 o'clock. I know that everything's stopped, and the MAX isn't running, and I'm going down the hill. And the back end of my bus goes in the right lane. The front end goes in the left lane. And I'm straddling the hump coming down the hill. And there's only 8 buses in front of the hump. And I'm driving, and I'm like, and I'm panicked, and what do I do? What do you do? Because you can't say, shut up! I'm going to die! You can't say that. That's not allowed. But I got to say, and I look at her and say, not now. So what does she do? She goes back through the 5-minute description of how she's going to be commuting later. And I'm like, quick, think, brain, think. Work up that half IQ. And I look at her. She gets done and is waiting there pensively as Sir Isaac Newton drives our bus down the hill. And I let go of the wheel because it doesn't matter. And I turn and I look her right in the face. And I say, I like fudge. And all of a sudden she understands, I'm not listening, not gonna listen, no need to repeat. I like fudge, done. By the way, when I hit Sandy, I stopped. And then I turned and I made it down alive. But Og sees things. See, people think, Dan, you're funny. This should be, Dan, what's it like riding on your bus? It should be great. And I'm dead silent because I'm listening to everybody. I hear everything. I see everything. I hear and see everything you riders do. Oh, I know. Not you people. Them. Right? And I see your waving styles. Right? I see that. I see the antenna, and I see the windshield wiper, and my favorite driving at night when somebody says, you know what, The stop's a little dark. I think I'll stand right in front of this telephone pole. And I'm driving, and it looks like this. My bus is coming, 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 nothing, coming, and I pass, and I see this. It's the homie. That's right. What? And I always tell him, hey, little clue, let's reverse this next time. Next time, wave before I get there, then hold still like a deer. It wouldn't matter, but the killer of every bus driver is repetition. See, you think, oh, well, right. You do the calculations of your hours and how many times you've been around and drove and rode on the bus, and I think 7,000 people have asked me, what time is it? 4,000 have asked me, do you go downtown? 4 have asked me, do I go downtown when I'm downtown? And I see all this stuff, like the smokers who have to take that super puff before they get on the bus. Because who knows how many weeks I'm going to be on there. Here comes the bus, and they wait for the last second. I'm coming on. And they come in and share that with me. Yeah! Happens every day. The person who's late, who takes 5 minutes to get their money out and put it in, and then asks, why are you late? Yeah. Really? Why am I late? They always ask that like you don't know. I know I'm late. The bus drivers call me El Tortuga for a reason. But you're guaranteed to get there almost alive, so. The 71 is one of my favorite buses. That guy can do math. 71's a good one. And one night, it's always, the bad thing is when I leave Og behind and I get excited, I'm like, oh, I get to get home and watch Doctor Who with my granddaughter. I'm so excited. And I'm driving. And this is about racism. I'm going to tell you about that right now. So, yeah. Everybody's, a room of 60 white people are worried about this. So I pick up these seven black kids. They're about 16, 18. And they get on, and they're just like my buddies and I were, wild, uncontrollable, freaky idiots. And they run to the back of the bus, and they're having fun. Well, there's this drunk guy who's been on the bus. I knew he was trouble when he ran into my door before it opened. What bus are you? 71? Are you the 71? Yes, I am. Well, I need you. So he gets on. And he goes, of course, he can't sit up front. He goes, sits halfway back. And he's boisterous, having fun. Saturday night young guys are back there. Woo-hoo! And he's like, you guys need to shut up. And I know, I only got 6 more minutes to go. To get to Clackamas Town Center. That's all I got to do. 6 minutes, I'm there, everything's done. But that doesn't stop him. It starts rolling and rolling. And he's going at them. And soon these guys are actually showing some great control. They're not getting all fired up and mad. And he's getting madder and madder and madder. And I'm thinking, oh, I only got 5 more minutes to go. Maybe I can get to the end without having to talk to anyone. My dream. So I'm rolling, and I hear him say something like, yeah, you guys don't know anything. You know how many women I've slept with? That's the scale. Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, do I interfere? Again, the kids, they're not doing anything. They're like, this is a dumb, drunk guy. And he's going on, and then finally one of them says something, and I hear, what did you say? That's the word that tells you something's bad in the bus about to happen. That somehow someone's really worried about what did you say? What? And they get all, ooh. And he goes, my mother was a saint. She was awesome. You have nothing to say about my mom. My mom was great. And he says, You people don't know what you're talking about. You fucking... And then I said, uh-oh. First of all, this is one guy and six 18-year-old guys who could probably pound his head in alone each. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, Og. Work it up. Yes, 4 minutes to go. And I think this isn't in the training manual for TriMet drivers. They don't prepare you. Okay, page 4. Drunk white guy gets on bus Saturday night. What do you do? Oh. No training, no preparation. And the only way I can think of solving this is to make that guy mad at me. To change his focus to the bus driver. Because then I'd only have 3 minutes to go. And you can say anything you want to me. I'm good. Blow away, whatever. I've heard it all. So people say bad stuff. I'm like, is that all you got? Woo! So I'm driving along. And I look back. I said, give him my best in control. Hey, what are you doing? Are you supposed to be doing that? Do you know what happens when people cause racial issues on my bus? And he goes, you don't know anything. He's just a fat fucking bus driver. That's what my daughter calls me, so it's... I'm like, ooh, he used the F word. And I'm like, I'm working. It's working, right? He's now mad at me. And I go, I'm not fat, I'm big boned. And he goes, you don't know shit. I said, believe me, I do. And he goes, oh, yeah? How many women did you sleep with? And I look at him, I said, including your fucking mother? Mission accomplished. Next stop, Clackamas Town Center. Thank you. So that's about it. So they have more of my stories on my Roll Easy blog. If you Google search rolleasyblog.com, you'll find it. Roll Easy Blog. Yeah. Let's all say it, please. Nice. I love people. When you get a mic, you have such authority. Quick, take off your pants. Okay. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Christensen. Very, very lucky to have him here this evening. And next up, we have our dear friend, Bill Lasher, who will be joining us and sharing some stories as well of his exploits on TriMet. The man just recently parted with his car, so he is bound, and I don't think he's a biker, so he is bound to TriMet eternally at this point. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Lasher.
No, I'm a biker, but I'm a chicken too, so I'm a fair weather biker, and I'm proud of it. But if anybody has a lot of weathering equipment, it's fine. I'm actually not going to probably talk too much about riding TriMet because there's a lot of humanity out there in the world in terms of transportation and whatnot. So I had this big disaster last night. I don't really need to get into it, but it involved a flooding toilet and vacationing neighbors downstairs and things spilling on their loan documents for their newly purchased home. So I didn't get to prep quite the way I might have liked tonight because, I did it at the last minute because that's what I do. I'm a journalist. And so I was trying to figure out what I was going to write about. And the thing I realized is I went back and I read everything I've ever written about transportation and transit and getting around and TriMet and riding the MAX and how great it is and riding the bus and how great it is because I don't fucking care what I ride. It's a fucking bus. It's a fucking rail thing. As one of my thesis advisors told me in grad school, the train, in this case, the subway in Los Angeles, is just a fucking bus without rubber tires. Or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe the bus is a train without rubber tires. I don't care. The point is, it's a conveyance. But what I've come to realize is that riding a conveyance, riding a MAX, riding a bus, riding even an airplane is this unique experience that is really only the first paragraph in my notes. And that experience is the sense that when you're on a conveyance like this, you're in your own place. You're going from here to there. You're not riding, you're not trying to like drive a car, you're not trying to ride a bike, you're not trying to get yourself somewhere. You're just in your own little world, so it becomes its own place. And I've talked about this a little bit actually on the Sprocket podcast about riding the train, the Amtrak. And what I've come to realize is that there's this sort of like experience that happens where you get advice, you meet people, you become your own person. You're in this world that isn't Portland, that isn't Chicago or LA or Glacier Park or wherever you're going. You're just on the train. So you meet people like Miles Uritz, who's the guy who told me that it's okay to wear sneakers to a wedding even if your shoes crumble. This is the kind of advice you get. It's the kind of thing where gay, Jewish, 75-year-old, balding men who used to sell shoes and despite being balding, wear buttons that say, "Stop losing hair. Ask me how." This is the kind of man who, you know, who you meet on one train, and then a year and a half later, you meet them on another train. And they become, really? They become your best wingman on the train. Because there are so many ways that you can operate when you meet a guy like Miles Uritz. You know, you're riding on a train, you're sitting there at Union Station, you're sizing up your competition, you're identifying your enemy, as we heard tonight. You're identifying your friends. You're identifying the people you want to stay the fuck away from. Because they're going to come up to you on the train at some point and tell you about this wonderful business deal that they're doing and why they're in Portland and why they're going back to California and why they just travel back and forth and back and forth and back and forth between these places to tell you about ambulance riding and the way that locksmiths can best use ambulances for their business and the way that really it doesn't make sense to fly in a plane because there's just some conspiracy here, some conspiracy there. You learn everything when you're on the train, and you also learn how to babble like I'm doing right now. So Miles Uritz. I'm at the station. I'm sitting there, and I'm sizing up my competition. I'm sizing up my friends. I'm sizing up everything that is to happen there. And I see this guy. I look at him. I'm like, "Stop losing hair. Ask me how." And I think, God, I really need to know that. Like, I'm getting this little thin spot here. I need to figure this out. But I know this guy. I've met this guy. And it turns out I met him last year on my way down to a fellowship in Berkeley on the train. And Miles and I had spent hours and hours together on the train. He was sort of like the mayor of the train. I had been sitting next to him in the, I don't know if any of you have ever ridden an Amtrak, but there's that moment when you're on the Amtrak where if you're on the superliners, those are those two-story ones, you go downstairs and there's like this big bright light at the top of the stairs. And if you're trying to sleep anywhere, that's not where you want to sleep. So Miles and I were seated in that spot. And at every single stop, whether it's like Chico at 3 in the morning, or it's Sacramento at 7, or wherever the fuck it is, someone stops and says goodbye to Miles. So we become friends, and we meet, and I realize at Union Station that I've met him before. One of the things I do in my writing is I mix up narratives, I mix up timelines, and I mix up subjects. So I'm going to jump from Miles to Mystique Diggins. And Mystique was a woman I met on the way back from this trip from Southern California. Now, Mystique is a self-admitted beauty school dropout. And I became fascinated with Mystique sitting on the lounge car of the big train, the Coast Starlight coming from L.A. back up here, after I was still fascinated by this Mr. Miles Uritz. And I realized, you know, Miles had made this, taken this time to talk with me, and Miles had taken this effort to make me as a friend. And I thought I could take this same sort of step with Mystique and with these other people I'd meet on the train. So I thought I'd talk to strangers. And Mystique was, and I know her name was Mystique because that's what her bag said. And so obviously it had to be true. Mystique was a Jefferson High grad who apparently wore bomber jackets from her parents' skinhead gang and didn't quite realize that some of the insignia meant what it meant on the jacket. So she didn't know why she was getting beat up every day she went to school at Jefferson High. So she quit school. And she found out later, she asked her parents what was going on. Why am I getting beat up all the time? Like, well, you know what these, you know, lightning bolts and these other symbols on your jacket mean. Anyway, the reason I got fascinated by this Mystique Diggins, I think it was Diggins, it may have been Duggins. I'm sorry if I'm not accurate here. You know what? This is the way it goes. Wait, did I just hear someone shout out Duggins? Wow. Anyway, she had this amazing, like, red hair and gold glitter she was putting on her eyes. And she was putting it so meticulously on her eyes, sitting there in the lounge car. And as she's sitting there putting on her eyes, and we're crossing the Cascades, and we're riding along, I realized that Mystique is just this fascinating woman. She kind of has a mystique about her. I don't know how I got that idea, but she did. Apparently, she was expelled from beauty school for sneezing on purpose. Yeah, it's really not something you want to do in beauty school. sorry, guys. I'm having a little bit of trouble here. So you meet people everywhere you go on this train. You meet people like Miles. You meet people like Mystique. You meet people like the young Dutch woman that I met who was traveling around the country after having gone to Potter World in Florida. And she was reading Harry Potter fan fiction on her phone. She apparently could only talk about Harry Potter. And she could only sort of like associate the world in terms of Harry Potter. And when I say young Dutch woman, I don't mean like, well, I guess I just blew it there with woman, but when I would say young Dutch girl, I don't mean like a 12-year-old. I mean like a 26-year-old woman that I'm about to flirt with on the train turns out to only talk about Harry Potter. The thing is, I've been thinking a lot about trains and about transit and about buses and about the MAX, and you don't get to experience this if you drive, if you bike, if you fucking walk. So maybe this is why I don't bike. Maybe this is why Doug thinks I don't bike, is because I'm too busy like watching the people around me in these ways that I get around town. And I know I'm babbling here, and that's because like I had a fucking like flood last night at my house. But I want you guys to think about what it means to take transit and what it means to transport yourself. We use this word transit, and obviously there's a connection with the word transition. It's the space that we occupy in between point A and point B. And it's the space where you can be yourself, you can experience, people who are really fascinating examples of the way the world works. You know, you can meet people who are, people who've lived long, interesting lives. This guy, Miles, his dad was 100 years old. He was 75. And he still took the time to talk with this, like, 30-year-old dude who was traveling through the world. And you meet people like Mystique, who had some mistakes in her life and fucked up a lot and wasn't afraid to admit it and be very proud of herself and be very proud of the fact that, you know, she was a beauty school dropout and she can make this own identity for herself of it. And whether that was an honest identity or not, I'd like to think it was an honest identity. This is who she was. And while it happens on Amtrak, it also happens on the MAX in all these shorter experiences. You know, it happens when you're traveling from North Portland to Old Town. It's going to happen tonight to each and every one of you who gets on the bus and gets on the MAX. There's going to be someone who, if you stop and ask them what the fuck is going on and what their story is, they're going to talk to you. And if they don't talk to you, that's part of their story. And the reason they don't talk to you is part of their story. It just happens on a more compressed scale. Anyhow, I'm your sort of like interim experience after Dan Christensen. I don't know who's going to come next. But the thing that I do urge you is don't listen to the Kick-Ass Oregon History podcast about the Halloween thing with earbuds in your ear after your toilet's plugged up, because you're going to get a whole fucking flood in your apartment.
Bill Asher, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And next up, we have the biblical scholar, Mr. Mark Russell, who's agreed to join us this evening and talk about the wonders of TriMat. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Russell.
Okay, so this is going to sound a little weird, but my best friend in college had a collection of Macaulay Culkin heads. It was back when Home Alone had just come out on video cassette, and all the video stores had these giant cardboard cutouts of Macaulay Culkin and the various robbers for Home Alone. And he would go into the video store, and if he couldn't find a movie, he would just, when he's walking out, he would just rip the head off the cardboard standout. You know, consolation prize. Sometimes he'd just put a ski mask on and just go running into a video store, snatch the head off, and turn around and go running out. Cops never caught him. So one day I went over to his apartment, and he's like, come here, I want to show you something. So I go up there, and he pulls out like 20 of these. I mean, we lay out a towel, and he lays down like 20 of these like Macaulay Culkin heads, these cardboard Macaulay Culkin heads, all in the sort of Edvard Munch-like scream. And he's like, we got to do something with these. But, you know, what? So we just kind of wrangled over what to do with these Macaulay Culkin heads. And, you know, after a while, cause and effect, he's like, we got to make a Macaulay Culkin jacket. So he had this nice leather jacket, and so we started taping the Macaulay Culkin heads on the back and on the arms and on the chest, and we've got way too many of these things, so we should make a Macaulay Culkin jacket for you. So we made a Macaulay Culkin jacket for me with the heads all over, and we're admiring each other, and people need to know about this. So we decided again, cause and effect, we should go downtown wearing our jackets. So we're walking down the street to the bus stop, and the vibe was pretty cool. People were like, hey, Macaulay Culkin. And we're like giving us high fives and stuff. And we're walking around our jackets. The bus comes, and we get on, and there's conversations going on the bus. The second we step on, all the conversations just stop. It was a very different vibe on the bus. Something I learned later is that when people are on the bus, they're not really too interested in crazy or avant-garde clothing. They pretty much just want to sit there and ride in peace and quiet. And now there's these two guys getting on the bus in Macaulay Culkin head jackets. And there's like a heavy metal guy in the back. There's like a Russian couple, and you know they're Russian because they're wearing hats. And there's like this old guy who's like wearing these really quite obscenely tight gray shorts and dress socks with dress shoes, and then just like a soiled white T-shirt. He looked kind of like the cardboard back of a paper doll. And even he like looks at us like, oh great, what do we got here? So we saunter to like an empty seat towards the back of the bus, and we're sitting there. And it's just dead silence. It's just awkwardness. It's just palpable awkwardness on this bus of shame. and the guy in the tight shorts keeps turning around and glaring at us. And the Russian couple just kind of like, I guess they're murmuring about whether or not they should move back to Russia or God knows what. Finally, you know, it's clear that everyone on the bus is thinking about the two guys in the Macaulay Culkin head jackets. But no one's willing to say anything until finally the heavy metal guy comes up to us and he sits in the seat across from us. He goes, "Hey, would you guys like some shrooms?" Which, you know, I suppose if you're going to sell shrooms to anonymous strangers, the guy in the Macaulay Culkin head jacket's probably a pretty safe bet. We said no thank you to the shrooms, and mercifully our stop came up downtown and we got off. As we got off, the guy in the tight shorts and the black dress socks and shoes finally comes running up to the door and, like, waves his finger at us and says, "You two ought to be reported!" And, you know, it just kind of sucked the whole joie de vivre out of the showing the world our Macaulay Culkin head jackets. So I was like, "Do you feel like doing this anymore?" And he's like, "No, this is just awkward." But we couldn't even get back on the bus, so we just had to walk home in our jackets. And it was, in a way, kind of the worst night of my life. But sorry to end on such a downer, but that's my story.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Russell. You know, in my day job, I actually work with this guy, and he's so less funny when we look over spreadsheets and talk about buying chairs in our budget and shit like that, so... Highly entertaining. Is it on? Excellent. In that case, we have Ian Studi, also known as Ian the Stud, since he's the man who raced a fucking bus on the bike, if you'll remember from the last Humanity on Wheels, and he fucking won, no less. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Doug. I was very flattered to be asked to come up and tell a little story this time around. Well, Doug and I actually work together, and so he'll be familiar with the story, familiar with where I'm coming from. Around work, I'm known as the bike guy. You might have one of those at your place of business. They're starting to get kind of popular. I'm going to tell another bike-related transit story, if you guys are okay with that. This is a little antithetical to the last story. There's no racing involved. I'm a Portland native. Are there any of those in the room? Anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, minority.
Hey. We're all up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to know that makes us luckier. We're very lucky bastards because so many people have moved here and they're awesome. So thank you. So this is a story from when I was much younger. When I was in my teenage years, I lived in this sort of foreign country that TriMet actually used to venture to, called Vancouver. I used to ride the number 5, and I want to say thanks to Doug for bringing up the number 5. That was my route. I lived in downtown Vancouver. I was 19 years old. The reason I rode the 5 was because I had a job in downtown Portland, and I'll get to that in a minute, but I also was riding the bus because, this is a story about being a teenager. And being a teenager means that you really don't have a complete brain yet. I wish they'd known that when I was that age. I did a lot of stupid things when I was that age. And one of the things I did was I immediately absolutely destroyed a car, and I was really lucky to walk away from it. So I was already familiar with the bus, so I was perfectly comfortable with that. But I also, when I crashed that car, I got a little, there was a pittance that came with it, so I bought a bicycle. And it was the first time I'd bought a bike as a quasi-adult. And so I thought, well, it's nice, I'll ride that once in a while. And I did ride it a lot, and I rode it to work occasionally when I would work downtown. This is the good part. So I had this job downtown, and I would leave work when I was on the bike, and I would try to, you know, it was a long ride back then. This is like 93. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I get home? And it was a little bit of a struggle sometimes to find your way through downtown. I wasn't that familiar. I was terrified. And again, I was a teenager. I was kind of stupid. So I also was foolish enough to take a job at Pioneer Place. You got, anybody been there? Yeah. So the woman I was living with, a friend, said, oh, I know this. I work in the mall. You should come get a mall job. This is like Friends era, you know. You guys remember that. So I, she said, well, I've got this good friend, and she works at Victoria's Secret. And I thought, awesome. And she said, well, you know, we need a stock boy. Well, I fell for that pretty hard. So my job at Pioneer Place was to basically sort crappy bras and panties all day and put them away so that those lovely ladies that work at Victoria's Secret can go and find whatever size that you need that's still not going to fit. But they can run in the back and find it. That was my job. I did kind of like it. So I was delirious one day after sorting panties, and I left work in a bit of a, you know, again, kind of a dumb teenage hustle, and I was riding down Fourth Avenue thinking, I'm going to take the Broadway Bridge. And then I had this realization that I'm a dipshit, and the Fourth Avenue really takes you towards the Steel Bridge. And I had this moment where I decided, oh, no, I'm confused. I'm thinking about women's undergarments. I need to go all the way around the block, and I need to go over to Broadway, and then I can get on the Broadway Bridge. So I go all the way around the block, and I figure, now I got it together. And I probably started thinking about women's undergarments again. And what I did was I crossed Fifth Avenue, where back in the day, there used to be stop signs for all these streets along the you know, it's called the Portland Mall. No, I worked at the mall. It was the transit bus highway is what it actually was. And what I did was I blew a stop sign like the biggest moron, and everybody's seen a guy on a bike do this, right? It's not new anymore. In fact, now I make a career out of it. But anyway, so I blow through this stop sign, and I look over here, and here comes, I don't even know what bus. It's just a really big fucking bus. And we have this moment, this driver and I, we see each other, and I realize how dumb and how dead I am. And he realizes just that in the Dan's caveman brain that he has to slam on the brakes. So we do this incredible simultaneous slamming on the brakes moment. I mean, we're moving into a perfect 90-degree trajectory towards each other. And, well, I'm standing here, so it's pretty obvious how this goes, right? So I managed to, basically, I wound up in front of the bus, and I bounced off the front of it. That bus driver stopped basically right at the moment where I was going to try and stop. And we briefly tried to occupy a space together. It was about this big. And I just bounced off the front, and I'm laying there on the ground. And I'll never forget, this bus driver, he leans out the window. Are you okay? That's awesome. I am laying there on the ground, and I swear to God, I swear to you, this is the truth. The first thing that comes to my mind is, I really wish I had my Superman underoos on right now. I want to jump up and rip my shirt open and tell him that I'm a fucking superhero. I was actually super fucking dumb. But anyway, so I collect myself, I peel myself off the ground, I realize that my back wheel on my bike's all fucked up, and I'm lucky to be alive, and then some little TriMet car shows up, and I fill out some paperwork, and I'm trying not to look at all the people on this rush hour bus who are thinking, who is this fucking dipshit? So, and why does my head hurt from slamming into somebody, and why aren't there seatbelts on this fucking thing? So anyway, I wind up long story short, I wind up wandering over. I leave the scene and everything's fine. And I go over to the bike shop where I knew some people and somebody fixed my wheel. And I wind up thinking I still need to get home all the way to fucking Vancouver. And as I'm going to leave the bike shop, I realize, okay, my foot really hurts. I think actually my foot was between the bike and the bumper, and like I'm actually realizing the shock is wearing off, and I'm like, okay, I'm limping. I realize, oh, you know, I took this awesome little test for this little card, and it lets you put your bike on the bus. Does anybody remember this? This was the best. You didn't get to just roll up as any Joe fucking schmo and put your bike on the bus back in the day. No, you had to go take a fucking test. You had to go get this awesome. And by the way, I do still have some of these cards if anybody really wants one. Yeah, you had to pay like $5 for it or something, but it's good for life. It's good for life. You had to go down to Pioneer Square, and they had a little video they would show you, and there was a little mock unit, and it was like a fake bus, and you put your bike on, and you follow the instructions, and now you know what to do. And then when the bus would come, you had to show your card through the window, like, I'm approved. I'm allowed to put my bike on the bus. I'm there's like a secret handshake and a bunch of other shit. So anyway, I realized that I'm in the club. Like I can put my bike on the bus, and I can't really walk, and my bike's really kind of fucked up. I'm like, I think I should get on the bus. So I walk back down to the transit mall, and I put my bike on the number 5, and I get on the bus, and I sit down, and that's when it really, like, my fucking amphibian, you know, teenage brain catches up and realizes, you know, you should be dead. And I'm sitting there on the bus, and I'm thinking, nobody on this bus knows, number one, that I'm an asshole and I just inconvenienced all these other people on a bus, but number two, that I really shouldn't be here. And the part that really sunk in when I was thinking about this story is that that bus driver was the fucking superhero. And I'm a really lucky guy. Thanks.
Thank you.
You know, Ian, that was all sensitive and shit, but you lost me at Victoria's Secret. I'm still back there.
I got one for you.
I love you, man, in it.
Here, wait, can I have my beer?
Yeah, you can have your beer. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the point where we're going to have an intermission in the show. I would like you to go over and try some Naked Winery samples of wine. You can purchase said wine at the bar. If you're not buying wine, get another drink. Tip your bartender as well. And then we're going to open it up beyond our featured speakers to open mic to other attendees in the audience. So we'll take about 5 minutes, and then we'll come back, and we'll hear some more fucking awesome TriMeth stories. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gabrielle, and I'm primarily a bicyclist. And I ride the bus mostly when I have friends in town and we need to come downtown to drink, because I'm classy and I know how to show people a good time on the number 15 bus. Yes. And one of the things that my friends all comment about when we ride the bus is, why does everyone say thank you to the bus driver when they get off the bus? This is the bus driver. It's their job. So I do this too, right? And I never did this until I moved here. And this is the story of why I always say thank you when I get off the bus. And most of this is true. So I'm an East Coaster. Yes. I spent most of the early 90s biking and taking public transportation around Washington, D.C., which is really freaking scary. Not the biking. Actually, the biking in Portland is scarier than the biking in D.C. was. Riding the bus in D.C. is scary. Not because of the passengers. The bus drivers in D.C. are possibly the meanest people on the planet. Every bus is a swearing bus. I made the mistake of pulling the next stop cord at like the wrong moment one time, and you would think that I had launched nuclear missiles at Russia, because this is, you know, this is what, like, the worst thing you could have done then, right? That bus driver cussed me out from the time I pulled the cord. I got off the bus like 2 minutes later, and he's still cussing me out as he's pulling away, right? This is what we're dealing with here. These are not the kind of people you ask directions of. It is not their job to know the other lines. It is not their job to get you to your final destination. It is not even their job to tell you if the stop you want is on their line. They just don't care, right? So this is my history. When I moved to Portland 15 years ago, without a job, as one does. And my first week here, I get on the bus, go into Montgomery Park, and I've got the little map they give you, and I'm thinking, I can follow along with the map and learn my way around town at the same time. And so I'm ticking off the streets, and I realize this bus is not taking me where I want to go. So I fold up the map, and the bus driver says, where are you headed? And I look around. I say, oh, shit, he is talking to me. I say, well, I'm going to Montgomery Park. And he says, you're on the wrong bus. I'm going, oh, shit. It's like D.C. all over again. And he says, you know what? It's not really that far off my route. I'll take you there. No one's going to mind. I'm sure this would not fly today. But yes, that bus driver dropped me off, and I said thank you, and I've been saying thank you to bus drivers ever since.
The last time I was up here, like a month or so ago, I didn't know how to do the mic. But it sounds like it's on. Anyway, my name's Andrew Coltrane, and I'm not in any relation to John Coltrane, although the cashier at Food Front asked me that today, and I thought, have you ever seen John Coltrane? Because... we're not related. I mean, and if we were, it would be a slavery thing, and that makes me feel bad, so don't ask me that. But really, I am related to Coltranes, but they were from Massachusetts and didn't own anybody because they were poor. I'm from Tucson, Arizona, and I grew up riding the bus there, and that was some scary shit. I love TriMet. I love Portland. I love riding the MAX, the streetcar, the everything. But I hardly ever fear for my life like I used to, like every single day. But I did have one harrowing experience on TriMet. It just really shook me to the core. I mean, it was even weirder than when people kept asking me questions about Moby Dick and being really happy that I was reading it, because that's the kind of place Portland is. If you're reading classics, people will talk to you on the bus. They was like, I love that. I'm so glad that somebody young is reading it. And I'm like, I'm 38. I guess I'm young. Okay. So I lived in Portland, you know, about 10 years ago. I lived here for a few years and learned the bus routes and how to bike and all that beautiful stuff. And then I had to go back to Tucson and learn how to fend for myself. But then I came back here and I got a job in Portland Public Schools, and I was kind of taking the bus to figure out how to get to places over the summer, because I'm a sub and I never know where I'm going to be. So I kind of practiced the taking the bike on the MAX thing, which was pretty fun. You put it up on the hook there, and yeah, you kind of stand and watch your bike and you're like, yeah, that's cool. So I was testing it out to go out to this one school way the fuck out there. And, you know, it was pretty cool. Put my bike up on the hook. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to reach my hand up to hold onto the bar because, you know, what else are you going to do? You're standing around. And my hand lands right into a fresh booger. And that was the absolutely worst thing that ever happened to me on TriMet, which is a lot, you know. Whatever, that's it. That's my story.
Hey, okay. I don't talk into a lot of mics or drink a lot of whiskey, so anyways. So I guess I'm going to talk about why I don't ride the MAX anymore. And And nobody's told any Max stories. I hope that's okay if I breach that. Okay, yeah. All right, cool. So when I first moved to Portland, I moved here with this girl. And we lived in this crazy place down on 11th and Main. And I used to ride the Max once in a while. And I remember we were waiting at the Max station just by PGE Park. And literally, we would ride this thing for, like, 5 blocks. It was really stupid. And we're waiting, and there's a bunch of, like, really kind of, like, strangely aggressive people talking and stuff. And we're kind of like, oh, shit, let's kind of move away from them and feeling a little awkward about that. And then as the train pulls in, we're trying to, like, ignore them and totally avoid, you know, like, not make eye contact and stuff. And the train starts to pull in, and all of a sudden, people start freaking out and screaming, and we look over, and we see this guy, and he jumped right in between the two trains as they were coming to a stop, and we heard the as he was, like, smashed. So I'm sorry, this is, like, a horrible... But that's actually another reason I stopped riding the Max. That was just another story. So I'm riding the Max again, like, years later, and I suddenly had, like, this wicked anxiety poured upon me. Like, I used to be fearless, and then all of a sudden, like, a truckload of everything, like, elevators or, like stuffed elephants and, like, everything I could think of would just terrify me. And I got, like, this agoraphobia one day. I was like, oh, my God, now I'm afraid of the outside. I was like, I guess I'll ride the Max to work, which is, like, 12 blocks. And so I hop in the Max, and as the doors close, it's like I could see, like, General Akbar. He's like, it's a trap. And I'm like, ah, I'm stuck in the Max. And then there's people crowd around me like they're going to fucking eat my flesh, you know, like all these people. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I get really hot and sweaty, and I'm getting dizzy. And I thought, oh, God. I'm just going to take off my sweater here, and I take off my sweater. It's like the middle of winter. I take off my sweater, and I'm like, that's a little bitter, but I think I need to take my shoes off. And I'm like taking off my shoes and stuff. And then, like, pretty soon, I'm like, the shirt, and like I got some, like, extra underwear on, so, like, my pants. I'm just like, oh, God. I'm, like, falling to my knees. And then suddenly, I'm like, it's a little bit cooler in here. And I look around, and I suddenly have space. Like, everybody around me has, like, cleared. I'm like, this is a little bit better, but oh, God. And it was one stop from here to there. This whole thing happened. And the door opened, and I fucking spilled out with all my stuff. And I was like, oh, and I'm at Pioneer Square. And I'm, like, sitting there with, like, all my clothes, and I got, like, my underwear on, and it's, like, winter. And then these guys, are, you know, they're, like, playing guitar and, like, you know, bongos and stuff like that. And this guy reaches over, and he's like, do you need this? And I don't think it was a cigarette, you know. And and I was like, no, man, I have to go to work, you know? And I was like, put my stuff on. Yeah, I gotta work. Anyways, so now that's why I don't ride the Max anymore. And that's probably why some other people don't ride the Max anymore, because of me.
Hi, guys, I'm Lane. I'm a frequent bus rider. I avoid the Max at all costs. Tonight, I'm going to share my story about the Line 20, Burnside Stark. I was living in Troutdale. I was living in Troutdale, had to go to Tualatin. So I caught the, I think it was the 5 a.m. 20 that left from basically Mount Hood Community College, because I had to be in Tualatin by 8 o'clock. So I'm practically dead asleep on the bus. We leave a stop. Next thing I know, the bus dies completely, just stops in the middle of the road. Driver says he can't get us started, so we all get off the bus. It's about 40 degrees outside. So we're all bundled up, waiting for the next bus, which is, I look on my phone, it's saying 25 minutes for the next bus. I'm like, great, I'm going to be late for work probably. So I get on the bus. The next bus that comes, it gets to about 102nd, and it breaks down again. So I'm thinking to myself, why did I choose to ride the 20 today? Why? So I get on the next bus, which is another 25 to 30 minutes. Finally get downtown, and so I'm waiting for the 96, which I rarely ride. Get on that one, and next thing I know, we get to Lake Oswego. That one decides to break down too, right by the Lake Oswego exit. So I'm thinking to myself, why did I even decide to go to work today? I should have just stayed home in bed. So I get to work fine, come back, and the same thing happens all over again. Each bus breaks down again. I finally get home around 9 o'clock, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe tomorrow I'll just call into work and not even try. Thanks.
Anyone else, ladies and gentlemen? The last of the open mic. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming.
Lazy MC.
Broadcasting live.
good.
Should we close it out?
Yeah.
All right. So this is the Sprocket Podcast closing out Humanity on Wheels number 2 at the Jack London Bar.
Number 2, the Electric Boogaloo.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a real good time.
I've had 2 Mad Maxes. I am totally drunk.
I've had 2 Cokes.
You are not drunk.
I am not drunk. I have to pee.
And now we're going to take the Max home. So
awesome. Yeah, lots of great stories. What would you say was your favorite tonight?
Oh, man. I mean, I had a good time. It's hard to beat Dan Christensen. So
yeah.
That guy is a badass, and he's driving your bus every day.
He's got the stories. He's got the delivery.
Yeah, totally. And Michael Anderson is waving goodbye. We should tell him goodbye. Oh, yeah. All right. This is the end. Goodbye. Oh. Pinata.
Thanks to ORHistory.com and TriMetDiaries.com for a fantastic experience. The Sprocket Podcast is at thesprocketpodcast.com. Write to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast, on Facebook. You can call us at 503-847-9774, or you can text message that number. Happy Christmas, everybody, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.